Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. Welcome back if you've been here before, or welcome to the show if this is your first time. This is a good interview that I'm really, really excited to share with you. So grab a tasty beverage or whatever it happens to be. I've got iced coffee here, and let's get into it. My guest today is an advocate for the sharing economy. He's a savvy executive and an entrepreneur. He was born in Australia, spent several years there starting out his career before spending almost 5 years in Singapore as CEO of VioCorp. In mid-2016, with his then 3-year-old daughter and wife, who was 7 months pregnant at the time, he moved to New York City to launch his company, JitJatJoe. Now, 4 years later, JitJatJoe is a marketplace and platform leveraging artificial intelligence instantly and accurately match hospitality businesses with vetted industry workers. 2020 and all that it has thrown at us has caused businesses of all types to have to adapt to change these new normals as they come. And JitJatJoe's marketplace place within the hospitality industry really exacerbated their need to adapt and change quickly. We go through that in this conversation. Now, let's hack. Tim Chatfield. Hey, listen up. If you are a small business owner, this is for you. Running a business, it's just plain hard. Endless to-do lists, employees to take care of, and your ever-present bottom line. So, first of all, kudos for staying on top of it. Well done. And I want to tell you about Gusto. Gusto built an easier and more affordable way to manage your payroll, benefits, and more. They help over 100,000 businesses with tasks like automated payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, free health insurance administration, 401ks, onboarding tools, you name it. Gusto made it easy. Plus, you can make contractor payments with Gusto, because Gusto makes it easy to pay your contractors today and W-2 employees tomorrow. And since money can be tight right now, you'll even get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/hack and start setting up your business today. You'll see what I mean when I say easy. Again, that's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/hack. Getting traffic, leads, and sales to your website can be really tough at times, and you can feel like no matter what you're doing, it just isn't working. But you also know that your success in business literally depends on your ability to do just this. Internet Traffic Academy understood this struggle and have therefore offered their blueprint absolutely free. Over the past 15 years, Internet Traffic Academy have developed and perfected a model called data aggregation. This blueprint is the formula the top 1% of marketers follow to generate endless traffic, leads, and sales online without spending a fortune. And you can get it absolutely free today. Additionally, if you prefer a step-by-step tutorial, you can get the Mass Traffic Blueprint course for 94% off the regular price. So if this sounds like something that will help your business grow, then go to masstrafficsecrets.com/special offer, all one word. You can either download the blueprint for free or sign up for the Mass Traffic Blueprint course, which at the moment is a huge 94% off. Once again, masstrafficsecrets.com/special offer. And we are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John.
It's great of you to make it here on short notice. And I know that's the times we live in. So it's going to be fun. So let's just jump right into it.
Sure.
Tim, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
That's probably, I consciously ask my subconscious to work on solutions while I'm sleeping or working on other things. And then and then present me with the solutions when I wake up or when the moment arises. So, you know how people refer to, or they'll say, look, I'm going to sleep on that. And it's a casual way of deferring an answer to a question, or they want to have an opportunity to consider it more fully. I actively use that as a tool and have a conversation with myself, ask my subconscious to analyze a particular problem set or issue, obstacle that I need to navigate around, and then to give me a little tap on the shoulder when the answer is ready for consideration and further deliberation.
Interesting. 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 I've never heard of this before. And so this is cool. So two questions I guess I have with this. So let's take the first one, Tim, and hopefully I don't forget the second one. But when you say you actually say this to yourself out loud, is this like in your head, or do you like, okay, Tim, tonight you're going to solve this problem? Like, is
when you're talking to yourself, I don't need to actually express volume out my mouth, but I consciously ask my subconscious to work on a solution to a challenge. So I will typically pose myself a question. I almost think of it like I'm reaching into the back of my mind and I'm just making a deposit, and I want that to come back with interest when it's ready. And often I'll do this just before my head hits the pillow, but I'll also do it throughout the day. As an entrepreneur, you're faced with problems, challenges, opportunities. They're all one big bundle, and they come at you sometimes directly, often from the side when they're least expected. And, you know, it's about getting clear on what is the question, from my perspective, what is the question that I actually need to answer here? And then trusting that, you know, I've got the capacity and the resources to find a way to resolve that, but not being, I guess, paralyzed consciously at the expense of doing other tasks.
Right. And then you also have to trust yourself on these decisions.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So do you like, when you're stuck on a problem, do you do this? Like, do you also externally like bring in other people? Do you talk to consultants? Do you talk to advisors and also take in their side of it?
All the time. But I mean, addressing your original question was, what was the one thing that I do that's had the biggest effect on my success? It is trying to leverage the 90%+ of my mind that isn't available to me consciously to help me make the best decisions possible based on the available information. So getting advice and having advisors and counsel to feed into that mix. But typically advisors just give you advice. You still need to make a decision as an entrepreneur. So an advisor is another input.
Right, exactly. Okay, so I see it. There's been, it's August 2020. There's been a lot of decisions that have been made this year that probably have never been made in a lot of our lives before. But can you take us, so co-founder and CEO of JitJatJoe, that's tic-tac-toe. Can you sort of take us back, Tim, just to explain to the listener, like what did the business look like in January of 2020?
Oh, in January of 2020, we'd done something we'd been working towards over the entire 4 years that our company had been in operation. And that is, we had basically leveled off our lowest month of the year with one of our highest months of the year. So we're an on-demand staffing platform focused in the hospitality arena. And the hospitality market in the northeast of the US, it's at its lowest point in January, and Q4 is typically its highest, with December being one of the highest months of the year. And by working consistently on expanding and evolving our mix of business, our January was only a smidgen lower than our December. So we were flying in January of this year.
So 2020 was going to be the year.
Oh yeah, it was. We've been growing at between 300% and 200% year over year growth for 4 years, and we were looking at another 200% to 250% year over year growth this year.
And you were solely in the hospitality industry?
Correct.
Which is is it just in New York, or is it around
New York, Chicago, and DC metro area?
Wow. Okay. So I'm trying to, I just want to see, because obviously at some point between then and probably March, there was a massive shift. So I'm trying to get at when this shift sort of took place. I know you have, I believe you have like, you, did you used to live Singapore or Australia?
I lived 4 years in Singapore. I grew up in Australia, moved to Singapore for 4 years. And then in mid-2016, I moved to the US with a pregnant wife and a three-year-old daughter to start a company on the other side of the world. So you've got to think I'm a little bit crazy just for doing that.
Okay. So I'm just wondering, because everybody seemed to take this differently. Some people in like February were seeing what was happening at other places and were preparing for it. Other people who just like head in the sand, nothing's going to happen. Like business-wise, that's just how it was. So January was a massive month for you. What did February look like?
February, we were busy focusing on activating a new product launch, which launched officially sort of the day before it got turned off in mid-March. March was where things really started to hit hard in New York. Sort of by the middle of the month, the economy was being shut down and it all happened quite quickly. We were making preparations late February, early March for some sort of, I guess, shutdown, but it came on much faster than certainly we expected and a lot of others that I was speaking to as well. So it started falling away pretty seriously in March, and then April still had some buoyancy because we were actively involved in supporting the frontline workers and the temporary hospitals that were getting set up, and all the workers on the front line and the patients still needed to be fed. And then things started to get a bit quieter as it went into May, and then June was probably the lowest. But the good news is things are bouncing really back now. We've taken this time to really reevaluate how we could use our resources to help the community first and foremost, to help the industry, being the hospitality industry, get back on its feet, and also help the 10,000 employees that we have in our talent community that are looking for work opportunities that need to be earning an income to put food on the table for themselves and their families. So we got busy at the beginning of March, starting to think about how we could adapt our strategy without losing the core focus as to what we stood for and where we were going and the mission, but to adapt to the changing economic climate and public health challenges that were being present. And we're now really seeing the fruits of that labor.
So what change did you have to make?
So firstly, we doubled down on our vision and mission and just said, look, we still really believe in what we set out to do. And in fact, on the other side of COVID, we believe that our vision of flexible work and flexible lifestyles is actually going to be more in demand than it was. So arguably pre-COVID, we may have been a little bit early, if you like. There's much more openness now than there was before towards flexible and contingent labor, because business leaders don't want to reassume all of the fixed cost base that they've just offloaded through their furloughs and layoffs that they've been going through. Plus, workers are seeking opportunities that are more flexible around their current lifestyle challenges, particularly if they've got children, right? We've got a 7-year-old and my youngest is turning 4 tomorrow. And we're having to deal with that homeschooling on top of running the business and everything else, living in our box in the sky in Manhattan. So we aligned around the fact that we still firmly believed in our vision and our mission. We then looked at our resources and said, okay, what can we do here? What's at our disposal? We've built a technology platform powered by empathic intelligence, which is really AI and machine learning infused with empathy to identify opportunities for individuals to grow and improve. And that expresses itself into the market as a gig economy platform. And then we have a labor pool of in excess of 10,000 hospitality workers. And hospitality workers, by their very nature, are passionate, resilient, and multi-skilled. So we said, look, why don't we look at where we feel the opportunities might be in the market while the community is dealing with the coronavirus, and start to cross-skill and upskill our workforce to be able to provide a valuable service to the community, leveraging their passions, their resiliency, and their already multi-skilled nature. So we broadened the skill sets that we were able to offer the market into cleaning and disinfection. So we've set up a clean disinfect division that will go in and disinfect a workplace, whether that's a restaurant, a hotel, a healthcare facility, or a public space, a government building, etc. We've built out a pool of safety ambassadors that our hosts from the hospitality world have easily transferred into, because they're passionate about making people feel good, making sure they got the right information, that they're being taken care of. And what we needed to do was train them up on the safety protocols. So we put all of our talent initially through a COVID-19 awareness and hygiene training. And then we've started skilling them up into various other areas that they could easily transition into, all the while without pivoting away from the hospitality market. We've added on rather than pivoted, and we're actually seeing the hospitality market really come back now, which is fantastic. And look, it's got a way to go to get back to where it was, particularly in New York, because there's a very steady, scientific, data-driven approach towards reopening. But that's keeping the infection rate under 1% for over 15 or 16 days now, which is a stark contrast to the vast majority of other US states.
It is, yes. So correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, but it's your business is basically like a two-sided marketplace, in the sense that you have a pool of 10,000 workers, and then you have the businesses that need those services, and you put them together.
Correct.
So, I mean, this is why I was pushing you, in case somebody listening was wondering why I was trying to push you, like, what did you change? Because you had this massive resource. Well, not only did you have this massive resource of 10,000 workers, but those 10,000 workers needed you even more now, because the hospitality industry, well, most industries, but the hospitality industry especially, was hit hard, super hard, when everything just shut down. As you said, it's coming back. So you as your team needed to sort of find new ways and new things that you could, like, not only train these people, this pool of people on, but then also you'd have to find a new sort of side of that marketplace, like new businesses that might need these services.
Correct. And interesting, what we actually found as time went on is that a lot of the same style of businesses were continuing to leverage our services, but they started back with clean disinfect as opposed to hospitality, because before you could reopen a hospitality establishment, you need to make sure it's clean and sanitized and there's no infection in there. So it's actually been a really smart play. And I think that when we get to the other side of COVID, which in my opinion is a safe and effective vaccine that's getting wide take up in the market, so we're probably a year away or so, what we've actually got is what we had before, plus all of these other add-on pieces, and we're much more appealing to a wider audience on both sides of the market, because we've broadened our focus without losing the core essence of what we stand for, which is human betterment and equal opportunity. So one of the big differences between Jit Jat Joe and other technology-enabled platforms that operate in the on-demand labor space is that we actually employ our workers. In the US, it's under a W-2 model versus a 1099 independent contractor model. Almost all others operate in an independent contractor model. So we already have a much closer relationship with our talent community than other platforms in this space because of the worker classification that we chose, that we believe was right for the hospitality industry.
Do you feel like you'll see a surge in new of that worker pool?
Absolutely. Look, the unemployment lines are long, 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 long. We're taking a careful approach to this in that we don't want to go and hire floods of people and then not have opportunity for them. So we're throttling our recruitment based on the demand regenerating in the market, because when people join the Jit Jat Joe talent community, they're coming to us because they need an income, and we want to make sure that we're able to provide that and not setting up false expectations. And in a two-sided marketplace, that's the constant challenge, right? It's like flying an aeroplane with instruments only. You got to keep the wings level. And oftentimes when you're operating at a fast pace and in a machine learning environment, it is a bit of a black box. And what you've got is your telemetry that tells you whether your wings are level, and that leads to both sides of the marketplace. So I'd imagine it's similar to flying a plane in the dark with instruments only.
Yeah, you're probably right. And so growth to you at Jajetjo in the near term and medium term is increasing the business, like the finding new client side of the marketplace.
That's the predominant focus at the moment. We are expanding our geographic service area. We're also continuing to expand the positions that we offer. For example, one of them we just added into the platform this month is a patient transporter, because there's a supply shortage of workers inside healthcare facilities, whether they're hospital or senior living facilities, around moving people from this room to that room, this ward to that ward, or to go and get this test, etc. So we're constantly expanding our service offering, whether it's geographical coverage or positions. And there we're doing hyper-local recruitment into those markets to build that supply pool up to be able to meet the demand. But it's about keeping a balance, absolutely. The other aspect to our business that's super interesting, and this is what we were launching just as COVID hit, is we're actually licensing the underlying technology to large-scale enterprises to allow them to optimize their internal labor, their private labor pools. And we've been working on this strategy for a couple of years, and we've partnered with the largest hospitality company on the planet. And as I said, we turned it on, and the same week that we turned it on, they had to hit it pause because COVID was spreading like wildfire. So yeah, it's been an interesting couple of months, that's for sure, John.
So whether it's like deciding to now do coverage for like patient transporters and include that, or like sort of licensing out the underlying, they're two very different, like in the scale of the project. Mm-hmm. But just think of a project within the company, Tim, and you as the CEO. How are you guys making these decisions that this is the right thing for you to execute on right now?
I typically follow a five-step process here. Number one, is it aligned with our vision? Number two, will it help us achieve our mission? And then three, we start to get into sort of some of the monetary or commercial realities, and will the investment provide adequate returns? And that then sort of flows on from there to four, which is the opportunity cost greater than the cost of doing it? So in other words, is the cost of not doing it greater than the cost of doing it, or is the cost of doing it less than the cost of not doing it, depending on which way you want to come at it? And then lastly, it's what's the trade-off, right? Because resources are fine all across the board. And typically when you commit to do something, you're doing it at the expense of doing something else. And it's important to understand what's the trade-off here? Where does this really sit on the priority list? If we could only do one thing, is this it, or is it something else? So that's the process I'd go through in evaluating. And I tend to run through that pretty rapidly at a high level to evaluate whether or not it warrants the time investment to really get comfortable with the level of detail that's required. And the level of detail required is obviously related to the answers. If it's a big thing like changing the architecture of the platform to enable licensing out the technology, that was something we always set out to do. So it was absolutely aligned with our vision. It was going to help us achieve our mission. We always believed that the investment would provide adequate returns. The issue was one of timing and prioritization. Had we done enough development of the platform to take that work on now? Did we have a buyer that was willing to partner with us that was actually going to be able to realize this? And all of that came together really around about 18 months ago for us. And then obviously we run the same sort of questions on smaller initiatives, some of which can be handled in a five-minute conversation. So it really depends on the size and scale and the investment required. And I find the answers to those questions generally lead us to the right place. And then, of course, I'll sleep on it if it's a biggie.
Or
more accurately, consciously ask my subconscious to analyze it and try and help me to see what I can't see through my conscious mind.
And I guess I have to say that I stand corrected, because I, from the outside, again, I said that I saw your business as a two-sided marketplace, but it's a two-sided marketplace, but then also a tech company that like powers the entire, well, I mean, the humans power it, but the tech puts it together in the most efficient way for both sides of the marketplace.
Correct. I mean, I say we're a technology company and our marketplace, we're our own first customer. So if you're going to tackle a big complicated problem, like, you know, trying to predict and influence human behavior, think Minority Report for people at work, okay? That's a pretty ambitious undertaking. That's what we've undertook to do as a technology company. And the best way to develop technology to solve real-world business problems in this instance, because of the complexity around human beings in general and the emotional creatures that we are, in our view, was to actually operate and be an operator of the marketplace in the first instance. Because another way to look at it is empathic intelligence, which is to us is machine learning or AI infused with empathy. That requires enormous data sets to become effective at predicting, let alone influencing outcomes. So we needed a way to access that data. And rather than spend years and years and years in the lab, we took the view that we could build a successful and ultimately profitable business using the technology that we'd be developing to license to others. And in actual fact, we offer the two things as a bundle so that when we go to a large-scale enterprise and we say, okay, you've got a large workforce that is what you might consider hourly, or you wish them to be hourly and more flexible, here's a platform that you can use to bring that level of flexibility that you're looking from a business side, as well as your employees are looking from their lifestyle perspective. But it can be supported on an overflow basis by a marketplace to extend your own internal labor pool and fill any gaps in your schedule that you can't fill with your own people.
I love it. And so really you're your own case study.
Correct.
And you can sell your successes with this pool of 10,000 people and the businesses you work with to show how it works. Do you foresee in the future, whether that's 2 or 3 or 5 years down the line, but that you would solely go into the licensing business of tech?
Look, I'm not super enthusiastic about that approach. I think it's certainly an option. I think that decision will be heavily influenced by who's sitting around the board table in a few years' time. Building a marketplace is an expensive exercise. It requires large amounts of capital. There's obviously very different margins on marketplace versus SaaS and licensing technology. I tend to think that the combination of the two is where it's at. I don't think that we will necessarily support all licensed clients with a marketplace that we operate. I think what will probably end up happening is that there will be a marketplace that we would license out to an operator that might supply an overflow or contingent labor outside into a licensee client in a sector that maybe we don't want to operate under our own brand. There's a subject matter expert that really is just looking for a platform that they can apply their knowledge and know-how, and you know, we can turbocharge their vision and license it to them. So I think that's probably more likely. But I do feel staying in the marketplace business, particularly inside the hospitality industry, there is so much opportunity. The market is so huge. There's so many people involved. And the learnings that the platform can get by being much closer and hands-on with those people will be at the advantage for all licensees.
I like it. So this is very subjective, obviously. And just, I would love to hear your perspective on it because you are right in the industry and you live in Manhattan. But let's just take one of geographically, the New York geographic region that you work in, because I know it's different for city to city. But from the people that you're working with on the human side of it, and then also on the business side, the last 6 months has been chaotic. We didn't know where things were going. People couldn't plan week to week. Things seem to be settling down from my perspective, but I'm not in it like you are. But where do you see us going in the next 6 months or a year?
Look, I think in a year, we're going to be at the next new normal. You know, I think we're in a new normal now. Obviously, where, you know, people say sort of, you know, what's it going to be like post-COVID? I don't think like that. I think that we're going to go through a few waves of cultural change based on the new realities that this particular coronavirus and the global pandemic has hit us with. In the next 6 months, I think we're going to be more active outside of the house. Right now in Manhattan, in particular, it's still pretty quiet. I mean, I live in Tribeca and our office is in Soho. And, you know, I've been walking into the office once or twice a week down Broadway, and I have seen a lot more cars, a lot more foot traffic. I'm pleased to say the vast majority of people on the street are wearing masks, which is great, and I hope that continues. I think that generally, though, a lot of people in New York are in their second homes or they've left the city. The population density is a lot lower than what it was. I would say in 6 months, we're starting to see a bit more come back. How long it's going to take, I'm not too sure for New York itself, but around about 6 months' time, I think we'll be a little bit more active outside the house. What's going to be interesting is it's going to be in the dead of winter, which is typically when people are inside. So hopefully we can get a bit more consistent messaging coming out from various government authorities in this country so that the society as a whole can take a more coordinated approach to making it safe. Obviously, I'm from Australia, as you can tell by my voice, and that region of the world, Australia and New Zealand, has got a very different handle on things down there. I mean, I was reading an article just last week, and in New South Wales, the state where I was born, they're talking about how many new cases in a day have to happen before they're thinking about shutting back down. And it's the threshold that they were talking about at the time was 25 new cases a day. I mean, 25 new cases a day, you get into like 25 new cases a minute here. Probably a second in the US, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's 50,000 plus new cases a day. So it's the crystal ball on that one's pretty cloudy. What we can do as members of society is pay attention to the science and think about not just ourselves, but other people. And that to me is wearing a mask, keeping your distance, washing your hands, and genuinely having a higher level of hygiene awareness, because this is a human-to-human issue. And look, there's the challenge for the hospitality industry, right? Hospitality is about bringing people together and making them feel good. Now we need to keep people apart at least 6 feet or have a mask on them when they're together, which inhibits some people feeling good. So it's a challenge. But look, I think as a society, humans are evolved enough now that we'll get over this. Science and medicine and technology in general is going to get us over the line, but the next 6 months is going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's a great answer. It's a very realistic sort of optimism, which I admire. I like it. And it's good to hear. As a Canadian, I think we're a lot like your Australian family and friends, where we've handled it differently and had different consequences. So it's good to hear. Tim, you've intrigued some people. Some people listening are probably in regions where Jajecho is functioning at now or will be in the near future. Could you just specifically tell the listener where they can find you online and like what you can do for them?
Absolutely. We've got three different web presences at the moment, which sort of will take you through our evolving coronavirus adaptations. Jitjatjo.com, which is JITJATJO.com. One that's probably easier to remember is higherhospitality.org. And the last would be cleandisinfect.us. Essentially, JitJatJo is a contingent labor platform powered by empathic intelligence that's designed on a business level to get you the staff you need when you need them, and on a personal level to provide flexible work with instant pay to support flexible lifestyles. So we'd love to hear from you if you're listening. We'd love to hear how we can help. We're certainly passionate advocates for human betterment and helping people do better, which has helped us rise to the challenge that we've been, or many challenges that we've been faced with over the couple of months. And we're interested in working with like-minded people and organizations and individuals that would like to be part of the journey, or we can help them with their journey.
I love it. Higherhospitality.org, was that the second
one? You got it.
Awesome. I will find links to all of those in the show notes. And Tim also has a presence on LinkedIn. I'll track that down as well and place it in the show notes for you so it's easy for you to find. And yeah, that's all of it there. Tim, thank you so much for stopping by again on the short notice. Thanks for sharing so openly. I truly, truly appreciate it. And good luck through all of this. And just keep doing what you're doing, because it is truly awesome to watch.
You too, John. It's been great listening to your podcast, and keep up the great work.
All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed that. This, interestingly enough, I did two interviews in one day, and they both happened to be with people within the hospitality industry. And it's as I said at the beginning, all businesses have been impacted in one way or another, positively or negatively. The hospitality industry, the restaurant industry, has been impacted massively, probably bigger than most other industries. And so it's really been, it was interesting to be part of these two conversations and get to hear from that inside perspective, and also to see how people are adapting, how they're making their businesses adapt to these new normals and to change. It's what we need to do as humans, as entrepreneurs, is to constantly change, and don't really see big change like this as a negative, but just an opportunity to grow both as a person and also as a business. So I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. And next week, I've got another interview, quite different. It's in the hospitality industry, but completely different. And I think you'll really dig that one too. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. It's the website. You can head over there and check out podcasts if you want to learn more about Tim, or just see what we're up to over there. There's a blog, there's a podcast, there's everything you could need. And get onto the email list to stay up to date. All right. Well, I hope that the rest of your summer goes well. And I hope that you are doing good and having fun out there. But until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.